Hello, good morning, and welcome to Raider Nation Radio. It's the morning tailgate here on this Tuesday. Vinny Bonsignor, he's back. I'm Clay Baker, and we got a lot to get into today here out of our Las Vegas studios. Jason Fitz from Yahoo Sports, will talk to him around 8 o'clock. 9 o'clock, Albert Hall, the Royal Albert Hall from the Vegas Summer League. He joins us at 9, and we'll also do a little four down territory at 7:30. We will also give you the word of the day for our Summer of Fun giveaway, where you could win a fantastic Vegas vacation. We'll tell you about that in about 20 minutes' time and give you the key word so you can qualify to win here on Raider Nation Radio. 702-365-9200. That's the phone number. That's the text line. As well as hit us up on X at R&R 920 AM. Vinny, you're back from your New York sojourn. How'd everything go?
Oh, beautiful. What a wonderful trip to New York City. Congratulations to Sebastian and Kahala. Kahala Bonsignor, my niece, got married. That's why I was in New York, Saturday night wedding in Long Island City, overlooking New York City, up on a rooftop. Beautiful, great food, great, you know, saw a bunch of friends, family members. My mom was there, my two aunts, my father's sister was there. You know, you always wonder, when's the last time you're going to see certain people in your life? I mean, just being realistic, we all age, we're all getting older, and certainly my mother, my aunt, and my two aunts, I should say, are getting up there in age. So it's great to see them all together, be able to celebrate with the whole family. So that was great. Beautiful weather. The weather was great. Got a chance to see the Mets on Saturday. They lost to the Houston Astros. It's all good. I got a chance to take my son and daughter and wife to Citi Field to see the Mets. You know, great new, not new stadium. It's a little bit older now. I mean, I guess 13 years or so, maybe. It's been around for a little while.
Still seems new.
Yeah, exactly. They did a great job with the rotunda and the Jackie Robinson rotunda, which celebrates, Jackie Robinson and his presence as a National League, player in New York City, Brooklyn at the time. And for those who don't know, the Mets are the byproduct of the New York Giants and the Brooklyn Dodgers. Both of them moved in the late 50s. And those are the two National League teams in New York. So it just left the Yankees. But very soon after, the Major League Baseball expanded and they created the New York Mets, who, if you look at their colors, orange and blue and white, are the colors of the Dodgers and the Giants. So it's kind of a celebration for Jackie Robinson. He was the great National League hero and obviously broke the color barrier. And the Giants, who both departed for the West. But it was a great trip. I'm really happy to be back. The batteries are recharged, ready to go. We are right around the corner from training camp. I'm fired up. I can't wait. It's July. Training camp starts. Rookies report on July 21st over in Costa Mesa, and I cannot wait.
Now, I guess we're like 20 days away from that. Mm-hmm. Kicking off 39 days until preseason game one, and 68 days until week one of the regular season for the Raiders and Chargers game. So it's closer than people think.
It's here. Mm-hmm. It's not even it's here. I'm listening to NFL Network, and it's all the storylines, top this, top that, top position group for this team. You know, we're at that point where we've run out of things to write about. We've run out of things not necessarily to talk about. There's still plenty to talk about, but we're at that stage right now. All the moves have basically been made. You're wondering what's going to happen with CeeDee Lamb. Is he going to report to training camp over there with the Dallas Cowboys? I saw something while I was in New York that he said, I want to be, at the very least, the second highest paid wide receiver in the NFL. That would be behind Justin Jefferson. They were drafted in the same draft. And he wants $32 million, period, exclamation point. And if not, I'm not coming to training camp. So, and he deserves it, because I'll tell you what, Clay, I don't care. You could laugh or whatever. He's going to get his money, whether it's from the Cowboys or somebody else. You put CeeDee Lamb out in the open market, he's getting his $32 million. So whether Jerry Jones is willing to do it or not, and I can understand where he's coming from, because, you know, there's Dak Prescott, there's Micah Parsons, that's an expensive roster as is. So he has some tough decisions to make. But if you're CeeDee Lamb, you don't care. You're like, okay, if it's not here, it's going to be someplace else. There will be a team out there if I hit free agency that's going to pay me that money. So it'll be interesting. I'm sure he's going to play this year. But the question is he going to play on a new deal? Or is he going to play this thing out, hit the open market, say see you later, and somebody's going to get themselves a great wide receiver?
Yeah, Brandon Ayuk is investing in himself too. You know, he feels very strongly that You know, he is a premier and elite wide receiver, and he's getting paid the fifth-year option. This year is around $14 million. So on a great team, you know, he's trying to test the market, or at least try to, like, find a market that the 49ers are willing to say, all right, we don't want to lose you. This is an important piece to the overall. And it makes you wonder, like, between Ayuk and CeeDee Lamb, which one is worth it more? Are they both the kind of the same as far as the market is concerned for $30 million a year, somewhere around there, as both elite wide receivers? Will each of their respective teams pony up the dough for that?
Yeah, I don't think that they're the same. That's just my personal opinion. I think CeeDee Lamb is a superior wide receiver. I like Brandon Ayuk a lot, and I think he's a really great piece to have on your team. Is he $32 million? I'm not sure he elevates to that level, but you know, 25 to 28, I would think is probably where you know his sweet spot is. But again, you know, with the 49ers, like the Cowboys, they've got a lot of expensive players to play to pay, and it feels like they prepared for the moment for him to potentially leave with their draft. They drafted Parcells from Florida. Is somebody that I would keep an eye on. I think he's a really good young wide receiver, and he could be the replacement, the long-term replacement for him. And I think the 49ers are, you know, probably, hey, if it works on our number, great. If not, we've prepared for it by, you know, drafting some good young wide receivers. They have a whole bunch of pieces in place as well. So I think they're potentially okay with moving on from Brandon Ayuk.
Yeah, well, they've been pretty good at finding the apt replacement, the equivalents in the draft.
Yeah,
they've shown it time and time again, year in and year out, that they can go and find somebody that's going to be the more affordable replacement and somebody that can, you know, still put up numbers. And I don't think it's more than just finding the right receiver that fits in a system. They just really find really good, talented guys that, you know, not only fit the system, but they're willing to, like, wait and maybe have a little patience with and see how they can be as versatile as possible and actually be very productive at the same time, because there were times when Ayuk was being kind of overshadowed by what Deebo Samuel could do in this offense. So it always made you wonder, like, all right, which is the most important, part of this offense? Which is the most important weapon? And you can't really just put your finger on one guy or not.
Yeah.
They're so good. Now, and for the Cowboys,
there's no replacement for CeeDee. That's the thing.
Right, but they also have to think about what are they going to do about Dak. So how much money are they going to pull out for both players? And when?
Right.
Because the time is now for them, too. They also want to see and want to squash all the rumors that go into certain camp situations where this is all we're going to talk about unless a deal gets done.
Yeah, and that might be unavoidable. Because, again, if I'm CeeDee Lamb, I'm not signing for 1 cent less than I think I deserve, because I know that I'm going to get that out on the open market. And I think that Dak Prescott's in the same exact position. You put Dak Prescott on the open market, he's going to get paid what he wants to get. We saw Kirk Cousins, who's a lesser quarterback, in my opinion. Everything kind of suggests that. And he got paid, at his age. And that's not even where, Dak's far removed from that age, or a few steps removed from that time window, age window. So he's going to get paid. He will get his money. So if I'm Dak Prescott, again, I'm not signing for anything less than what I believe I not only deserve, but what it would be out there for me in the free agent market. That's my question with Brandon Ayuk. I don't know what exactly is out there for him on the free agent market. I don't think that side by side he and CeeDee Lamb are the same player or thought of as highly. That doesn't mean he's not going to get paid. He's going to get paid. And it's probably going to be more than what the 49ers are able, not necessarily want to pay him, but are probably able to pay him with everything else that they have going on, and perhaps even with the Cowboys too. I'm sure if you asked Jerry Jones to write the check and there were no repercussions from a salary cap standpoint, he'd write a check for Dak Prescott right now and write a check for CeeDee Lamb right now and write a check for Micah Parsons right now. I just named three players, though, and you have to make it fit under the salary cap and, you know, continue to maintain around those players. So it gets a little bit problematic. So there is a question, you know, and Brandon Ayuk is a perfect example. He goes on social media, they don't want me back. It's not that they don't want you back. It's that you have to fit that puzzle into a bigger, that piece of the puzzle into a 53-piece puzzle under the salary cap. So there's a huge difference between we don't want you back, and we just can't really pay you what you want because we have to also pay for the 52 other pieces of the of this puzzle. So, but they talked it out. It sounds like, oh, okay, all right. You know, they kind of squashed the whole, we don't want you.
Yeah, it took about 5 days, and, you know, next thing you know, Aiyuk seems to be happy enough with whatever they came up with. But, you know, as you said before, the good teams figure it out, you know.
Yeah.
But when you...
The good teams also know when to walk away, though.
Good teams, but, you know, sometimes you're good teams because you're good because you have talent that was affordable, and you're able to like kind of build around it. But when the Piper calls and you know, contracts are expiring, you know, how crafty is everyone now, and can you get people on the same page to believe in the same vision going forward? So you can kind of write like a deal that makes everyone happy, the nice price,
right? And if not, how comfortable are you in who you've drafted and developed and have waiting in the wings? If you feel like, you know, the young wide receiver from Florida has a chance to maybe not be exactly what Brandon Aiyuk was, but can replicate what Brandon Aiyuk is, and maybe do it a little bit differently, but the production can be something similar. Maybe not this year, obviously, he's a rookie, but down the line, if you feel good about that, then you feel okay or less prohibitive about saying to Brandon Aiyuk, we'd love to keep you around, but it's just not going to work, and you feel confident in your replacement. That's why with, you know, for the Cowboys, I don't know that you have anyone that can be a CeeDee Lamb right now, your number one wide receiver. You know, as good as Aiyuk is, he's not the number one wide receiver. He's among a collection of really good players. You know, you throw your George Kittle in there and like you said, Deebo Samuel, and now the young players that they have drafted. And you know, the way Kyle Shanahan does it, it might look a little bit different. It might the skill sets might not be exactly the same, but collectively, as long as the production is the same, he'll roll into the future like that. I don't know that the Cowboys can afford to let a wide receiver like CeeDee Lamb leave, because I don't know that they have that kind of infrastructure the way the 49ers do.
Yeah, I mean, you can, the 49ers are so stacked that you can allow that rookie, Ricky Pearsall, to kind of, you know, find his footing and maybe find a role to start out with. You know, it's not like your normal rookie wide receiver that has to go and try to, you know, put all the responsibilities on his shoulders. It's not like that at all. But for Dallas, the cupboard's bare. You know, you're going to rely again on Brandon Cooks and Jalen Tolbert.
Right. Well, yeah, you know? And those are not even considerations as replacements for a CeeDee Lamb. You know, Brandon Cooks is he still there? He's still on the Brandon Cooks.
It's hard to believe, isn't it?
Is he back? Or
yep, he's still there.
So you know, you've
his 11th year in the league.
Wow.
My goodness, Brandon Cooks, keep going, man. Keep chugging on that. I love to see that.
Speed kills, man.
Yeah.
They don't have. Is he in Dallas or Houston? He is with the Dallas Cowboys. Wow. Did he bounce back to that's yeah. Okay. So Brandon Cooks, you know, I mean, he's getting up there in age, but he's
nothing you're going to rely on that's going to
be
100 and, you know, what's going to replace 180 targets and 1700 reception receiving yards?
you're just not
Brandon, like, 3 seasons combined.
Yeah, and it was him 4 or 5 years ago where he was you know, knocking on the door, 90 catches, 100 catches. He was really good there for a little while, but he's just not that guy. So that's where, you know, the rubber meets the road for the Dallas Cowboys, is that you just mentioned who they have. And, you know, so the prospects of really, you would take that would be a massive hit for the Dallas Cowboys if you removed CeeDee Lamb from that. And I'm sure, you know, your quarterback's like, no, I want to be here with him, not as opposed to him. So somehow, some way, they're going to have to get that worked out. But again, you know, if you're CeeDee Lamb and you see all this money that's being paid great wide receivers, and you feel like you might not be Justin Jefferson, but you're not too far from being Justin Jefferson. So even if you don't, I think in his mind, he's okay with not getting the exact amount of money or more than Justin Jefferson's getting. However, he's not going to take you know, a big pay cut from that, or a significant pay cut from that. He's going to want to be right there with him, or right there, right behind him. And if the Dallas Cowboys can't do it, if it's too prohibitive from a salary cap standpoint to make that happen, he's going to bounce.
All right, we'll take a break and we'll come back on the other side. And there's a interesting list coming from Pro Football Focus on the offensive line rankings in the NFL. Where do the Raiders rank? Where do some of their opponents rank against the rest of the league? We'll tell you next here on Raider Nation Radio. And also when we come back, we'll give you the key word of the day for the summer of fun here on Raider Nation Radio.
Andre James and Cody Whitehair and Andres Pete, all the veteran, Colton Miller, come on. You know, all those guys have played a lot of football, and they know it. They understand it. And what's cool about those guys is there's zero ego to them or any of that. They're helping the younger guys. They're helping Jackson. They're helping, DJ and all those guys. I see Colton out there always working with DJ, always working with the younger tackles. And that goes to the first question we had earlier. How's the room? How they go? They're unbelievable. They do a great job. They help each other out, and especially the veteran guys help the younger guys out. It's a pretty cool fit.
Raiders offensive line coach James Craig coming back here on Raider Nation Radio. Thanks for being with us. Vinny and Clay here on your Tuesday. Just to let you know, the word for the day is cabana. Text the word cabana or cabana, C-A-B-A-N-A, to 702-365-9200. That's our word for the day, our key word today for the summer of fun. You qualify for a nice three-day vacation here in Las Vegas. Tickets to go see the Sphere show. There's tickets to go see Alejandro Fernandez. A pair of tickets for Cirque du Soleil. High roller observation wheel. $1,000 spending cash. So text the word cabana into 702-365-9200. James Craig coming back, talking about the good mix of young players and veterans, especially with the communication that's going on there. For him to say, he loves that Colton Miller was working every day with DJ Glaze, the rookie that was drafted out of Maryland for the Raiders. And, and that's really good because, Colton didn't necessarily, have to be, on the in the trenches for mini camp and OTAs, because there's not much an offensive line could do a whole lot. I mean, especially if you're kind of like coming off an injury, you don't need to push it right there at this part of the season. But it's good that he's there because his influence means a lot. His word means everything. And maybe we're finding, even more about the kind of guys that are going to be relied upon for leadership, not unlike Colton Miller, but also somebody who has been playing ever since he was drafted, Dylan Parham, who's now been thrust into a different role as well.
Yeah, and Andre James, who returns, mm-hmm. As a center, and three different regimes have thought highly enough about Andre James to bring him in as a rookie free agent, make him the starter, sign him to a new contract, a second contract, keep him as a starter, and then this group has signed him to a third contract. So good for Andre James. I think he's absolutely without question one of the leaders now on this offensive line. Colton was definitely coming back from, remember last year he had the shoulder injury that hampered him down the stretch. They're going to treat him with kid gloves or did treat him with kid gloves. And I would imagine that's still going to be monitored and managed during training camp. As one of the things I think Antonio Pierce brings to the table is the understanding of getting players through a season, the importance of when to push those buttons the fullest and when to hold back to preserve in order for them to be at their optimal best throughout the season, because that's really what it's all about. So I would imagine a guy like Colton Miller at this stage of his career and some of the injuries that he's dealt with is going to get managed, but throughout the season with the practice schedule and all that. But to your point, he was out on the sidelines throughout minicamp and OTAs and was certainly a prominent voice, especially to some of these younger players. So, and it's interesting looking at Pro Football Focus. They put out their rankings for the offensive line. They always do that a before the season ranking. I want to say they do a mid-season ranking and then a postseason ranking once it's all said and done. And the Raiders are starting at number 19th, which I think is fair. They were I think they finished at the cusp of like 12 or 11 last year, somewhere around the top 10. They worked themselves into that area. And I think starting this year with a new right tackle and a new left guard, even though I think that in the long run, both players can be improvements from where it was last year, especially now that you push Dylan, or move Dylan Parham over to right guard. You're potentially strengthening two positions now with Dylan at right guard and Jackson Powers Johnson at left guard, and then Thayer Munford at right tackle. You might actually have improved three different positions. That's all on paper, though. Have to see it, but I think starting at 19th is fair for them. with a chance to move up by the end of the year. And to me, that's going to be the more interesting part of this, or as interesting, is where do they finish when it's all said and done?
I think there's a there's reason to be optimistic, as the paragraph states, for the Raiders. I look at the teams that are around them, though, at 19. Below them is 20, or the Panthers. Good God. And the Miami Dolphins at 18. We talked last week about how scanty the offensive line is for the Dolphins, because they haven't been able to afford everybody that they want to keep, you know, especially when they know that there's a price tag coming due for their quarterback, Tua Tagovailoa. But for the Raiders, I see more continuity, you know, and I see better depth than I've had in recent years, where there'd be like years where, like, well, you kind of hope that maybe, you know, Lester Cotton will find a role, or somebody that comes up as a, you know, everyone's really high on. Well, everyone's really high on the guys that are here now, but there's a lot more proven depth that's there. And I think getting a guy also like Andres Pete really kind of shows that if there is an injury at tackle, that they feel like there's going to be, you know, an apt replacement. And you can't ask for much more with a guy who's been in the Pro Bowl and is used to starting like Andres Pete. So you feel really good about, you know, having the right kind of guys there, and maybe some rookie infusion if Jackson Powers Johnson becomes the kind of like the force that you're hoping for. This is a very solid line, and it also goes to say that for a guy like Thayer Munford, if you're able to get somebody, you know, not many guys can be around in the seventh round that could be, you know, pushed as a starter for a right tackle. But Thayer Munford is. And I think he's going to hold on to that spot, and it's going to look really, really good as another depth piece that was way in the bottom of the draft is going to be recounted on as a reliable starter and somebody that I think is going to get better throughout the season, because, you know, he's been worked into the mix so well over the past season last year that you almost feel like, you know, he's been there already as like a starter, but he hasn't. He hasn't started the way you think he's going to. But I think now this is just going to be like an easier time for Thayer to kind of get this offense, and maybe an offense that maybe he's a little more geared to with the outside zone runs.
Yeah, you hope. And that's where, you know, that's why I think that they're starting at 19th, is because there's more hope right now than, you know, you mentioned continuity. You are replacing it's three different starters, three new starters at different positions. Dylan Parham is a proven commodity, but he is making the switch to right guard. Thayer Munford has not started at right tackle over a prolonged period of time, so there's a question mark there. Jackson Powers Johnson, for all his accolades in college, is a rookie starter, at left guard. That's if he even wins the job in training camp, which I fully expect him to do, but right now, you know, and if you're, you know, Pro Football Focus, you're looking at that with a little bit of uncertainty, because there are some moving parts. Now, the depth, I think, is as you mentioned, as good as it's been in a while, because not only is it Andres Pete, but you also have Cody Whitehair, who's been a Pro Bowl player, different stages of his career with the Chicago Bears, can play both guard positions and center positions. So if something were to happen to either Dylan or Andre James potentially, or Jackson Powers Johnson, you have a proven commodity in Cody Whitehair. And again, as you mentioned with Andres Pete, you have somebody that showed last year that he could play tackle. He moved from guard, where he was a Pro Bowler, to tackle for the New Orleans Saints. I guess in a pinch, he could also start at guard, move back to guard. I don't think that the Raiders hope that happens, or I think the plan for him is to pretty much stick at tackle. But you are talking about guys that have a whole bunch of games under their belt, have seen it all in so many different ways, and that's a commodity that the Raiders didn't have. Their backups in previous years were often, like you said, the lesser cottons of the world, guys that hadn't proven really anything at this level. So it's good protection to have, in case something were to happen. But even with that lack of quote unquote continuity, because there are three new starters at three different positions, I think by the end of the season, all of those guys are going to settle in. I think this has a chance to be a really good offensive line.
So PFF, they pride their offensive line rankings, and when you look at who is on the list ahead of the Raiders, especially in the division, and I always have the pointers like Denver Broncos at 15. You know, I mean, this was an offensive line that was beleaguered last year. They had a hard time protecting Russell Wilson, and it makes me wonder, like, all right, well, what's the plan this year? Because they're rolling out more or less the same guys. And I think Cushenberry's is out, but, you know, McGlinchey, this is a guy that was paid a lot of dough and has not really lived up to that kind of contract. So it makes me wonder, like, how far away are the Broncos and the Raiders as far as PFF is concerned? Because to me, I still feel like the Raiders would have one up on Denver.
I agree. I think that they, you know, on paper right now are the better offensive line. You know, maybe PFF is doing some projecting with the Denver Broncos. But I feel like the Raiders, you know, are better right now, even with some of the I quote unquote. And the only reason I use uncertainty is because, again, Thayer Munford hasn't played a full season at right tackle. Mm-hmm. Jackson Powers Johnson is a rookie. Dylan Parham is making the move from left guard to right guard. So until further notice, until all three of those players prove that they are stabilizing forces and positive pieces at their positions, there is some uncertainty, and I think that should be the only reason that they're not hurt right now ahead of the Denver Broncos. But I think when all the dust settles, I think the Raiders are going to have a better offensive line than the Denver Broncos.
All right, we'll take a break, and on the other side, it's four down territory as we talk about some things in and around the league and perhaps another wide receiver that might be a little disgruntled about where he's at in his contract, a next Raiders opponent. We'll tell you who that is coming up next.
First down, and it's first and 10, Las Vegas.
Thanks for being with us here on the Morning Tailgate. It's Raider Nation Radio. Jason Fitz from Yahoo Sports will join us at 8 o'clock. Thank you for being with us here. All right. Out of all the receivers that are now, trying to find some sort of headway, some sort of advantage in this part of the season to get a new contract, Amari Cooper is now willing to hold out for a new deal in Cleveland, which is a little crazy because Amari right now making 23.7 currently. He feels that he is worth more. And, you know, maybe he is. He's had some interesting years. But sometimes if you're on a team that, quite honestly, isn't full of weapons, like the Cleveland Browns are at wide receiver, you kind of have a bit of an advantage. Right now, Amari Cooper is planning on holding out for the moment for training camp, unless there is a lucrative long-term deal. A four-year contract for a guy who is 30. It's crazy. Amari Cooper was actually born on the day of the Bronco chase. Isn't that nuts? June 18th, 1994. But he's 30 now. Normally, four-year contracts are reserved for guys in their 20s. How do you think this will work? Because if you're already paying $230 million for a quarterback who's played 12 games in two seasons, how do you invest in a wide receiver who did help keep them alive last year, but do you find that equivalent in the draft and you say, hey, listen, we appreciate your time here, but we have other fish to fry because we also have Nick Chubb that's also coming up on the deal.
Yeah, I mean, he's in the last year of his contract. Still 29 years old, so still, still...
Just turned 30.
Right, exactly. I'm looking at the deal. It's $20 million base salary. I could see them probably doing something where, they give him an extension for a couple more years, put a little bit more guaranteed money into his pocket. I don't think he's going to – I would hope that he knows that he's not going to break the bank at this stage. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure what he's looking for is to turn that $20 million into, maybe when it's all said and done, like $40 million or so, through signing bonuses and salary for the next – few years. So I'm sure that's the play here. But if he's really thinking, and I got to look into what is being said or being insinuated. But he's certainly not somebody that's in line to make a huge payday here at all. So, but I can see where going into the last year of his contract, saying, hey, I want a little bit more security moving forward. I'd like it to be here with the Cleveland Browns. I know I'm not going to be here for the next 4 or 5 years, but put a little extra money in my pocket.
Okay, second down.
Play action on second and 12.
Yesterday, we talked a little bit about the Warren Sharp stats on quarterback incompletions, highest rate of incompletions due to inaccurate passes, and the Cleveland Browns' Deshaun Watson led the league 43.9%. So the number of incompletions that were actually due to inaccuracy, Deshaun leads by quite a large margin there. And it makes me feel like, so if Cleveland is is starting to worry about, all right, can we get a full season out of Deshaun? Can we get a great season out of Deshaun? You probably need to make sure that he's got the weapons that he's comfortable with to kind of like ensure that. But nothing's for certain here, because if Amari Cooper is looking for that kind of money, it makes me wonder how they can afford everybody, because they still want to make sure that the pieces are in place that they can afford for their defense as well. That is like an absolutely great defense. So I'm thinking by week four, when the Raiders and Browns have to play, I wonder how in sync this offense will be for Watson and Cooper, because it seems like Watson, a lot is riding on him for this team to get better. And they had a great season last year and rolling into the playoffs with Joe Flacco. But it makes me feel like this part of the season, if they need to get off to a good start. And if they could get together in training camp, I think this would be really important if they could. But it doesn't look like that's going to happen anytime soon.
Yeah, and, you know, obviously the Cleveland Browns, Deshaun played 9 games last year. They need to keep him on the field. He was playing, you know, he was starting to play a little bit better. It felt like he was starting to find himself, prior to getting hurt and going down for the rest of the season. So they just need to get him to that point. The Browns remain, for me, one of the more intriguing teams in the NFL, because if they're able to turn back the clock a little bit and get him to where he was playing with the Houston Texans, this has all the makings of a very good, honestly, a championship level team. I mean, they by hook and by crook got themselves into the playoffs last year, playing the majority of their games or a whole bunch of their games with backup quarterbacks. You know, and they still managed to make the playoffs, and miraculously so. A great coaching job, but it also tells you how good that roster is, in and around the quarterback. So, you know. I know that Warren Sharp put out the inaccuracies. It'd be interesting to me to talk to Warren to figure out, did you do all the film work, you and your staff, and how did you decide what was what? What was the right route? What was an inaccurate throw compared to maybe an inaccurate, route, right, type of a thing? So,
That's the question that everyone has for PFF too.
Exactly.
How did you know exactly what play that was? And did somebody run the wrong route, or did they actually, was that an errant throw?
I'm not saying you take it with a grain of salt, but you take it with a grain of salt. So, and I know Aiden O'Connell was up there, and I think we all witnessed some inaccurate throws by mm-hmm. Aiden, which is, understandable. Considering the circumstances that he was put in, the Browns absolutely need to get a return on their investment in Deshaun Watson, like ASAP. And if they can get that, it's wide open whether that will happen or not. He certainly hasn't in the years that he's been in Cleveland. He hasn't proven to be that player again, and hasn't really kind of come close. He was closing in a little bit last year before the injury, but by no means was he playing as the older or as the younger Deshaun Watson, the Houston Texans Deshaun Watson, was playing. But if they can get that turned around, that's a team to watch.
For the Raiders and their upcoming opponents, due to this list of the highest rate of incompletions due to inaccuracy, Deshaun Watson leads the league at 43.9%. That's a week 4 opponent. Week 3, Bryce Young, 37.7%. And just below him, week 2's opponent, Lamar Jackson, at 36.7%. The point I'm making is, how can the Raiders' secondary keep up on that? And maybe it has something to do with, if you got great defensive line pressure, you could be a little more aggressive with your DBs and secondary to maybe take advantage of inaccuracy.
Yeah, and with Bryce, the question for me was how much of it was just on him and how much of it was just the fiasco that was around him. Every time I looked up, that kid was running for his life. And it reminded me of Shakur Sanders over in Colorado, where the offensive line was so bad that it was hard to get a read on what was really going on, other than to say, this guy's just playing under duress all the time. So when you look at, Bryce Young's incompletions and inaccuracy numbers, a lot of that to me was due to throwing under duress all the time. I'd like to see how many, what that off target rate was when he just had a chance to throw out of a clean pocket and just sit back there with some more comfort than he normally did for the balance of his snaps, and was he able to deliver good balls in that scenario. And on top of that, he just didn't have any weapons as well. So Whereas a Lamar Jackson, by now, you should be better than this. This is my you know, problem with Lamar. I think he's a tremendous player, but when it gets right down to it, and you know, the playoffs have shown this, the overall statistics have shown this, he leaves a little bit to be desired in terms of throwing the ball and being accurate and being an on-time, you know, quarterback. I think you can win with him. It has to be a specific way that you go about your business, using him as a runner, using your run game, taking chances down the field. It's just a different way to do it. But at some point, the inaccuracy aspect of his game kind of rears its ugly head, and it's usually at the worst possible time.
Yeah, it becomes a pattern more than just an anomaly in a season that you felt was perfect, almost an MVP-like season for Lamar. But there's still some reason for concern when you still have almost 40% of inaccuracy, according to Warren Sharp. Let's take a break, and on the other side, we'll get in some thoughts on the text line at 702-365-9200. Text the word Cabana in the 702-365-9200 so you can qualify for this week's Summer of Fun prize, the Vegas Vacation, here on Raider Nation Radio. Jason Fitz will join us from Yahoo Sports in a few minutes at the top of the next hour. We'll also take your thoughts on the text line at 702-365-9200. That's also our phone number. Get in touch with us here, 702-365-9200, and on X at RNR920AM. The Pick is In as a docuseries that NFL Films has been running, and I really love it. I love seeing some of the candid stuff that you can't really get anywhere else, and you know, it'd be awesome if they were able to like run it during the draft, but there's no way you're going to get that. But you're getting cameras up close and personal in certain teams' war rooms. And just a story we kind of touched on a little bit yesterday, but the fact that the Rams were fervently approaching teams trying to move up in the draft in the first round, and one of them was offering the New York Jets something because they were at number 10, they slid back to number 11 to allow the Vikings to move up and get J.J. McCarthy. But the Rams had other ideas in mind, and they really wanted Georgia tight end Brock Bowers, who they earlier tried to move up to number 10 to get that. Here's some of the sound that comes in from this. This is Les Snead talking about how teams do not like to trade down too much, too far in that first round, and there's good reasons why. And then they try to get on the phone with Kevin O'Connell, and we'll see how that goes.
A lot of people do not like to trade back in the first round.
He doesn't think they're going to move back this far.
You've waited a long time for that pick. You've studied, you've analyzed it. So people will trade back, but it usually takes a lot.
There's not going to be any real options probably to get up in, is there?
I mean, I look at 11 being one. I mean, maybe you know from Kevin and them.
I think they'll be comfortable taking McCarthy there. I'll call him, though, real quick. Hey, if your guy's there, you guys aren't interested in going back, right? Yeah, you're going to take him if he's at 11, right? Okay.
As Minnesota.
Okay, see you later. They were very certain they wanted to take McCarthy, no doubt. But the Rams apparently offered the Jets number 19 and number 52 to move up to number 10, and they wanted Brock.
They wanted. I knew all that was going on as it was going on. Can't get too deep into that, but they wanted Brock Bowers badly. And I know there were attempts to move up even with the Raiders to get him, and then they realized, well, Brock is literally their guy, at that point. So it was all for naught. Had the Raiders not been sold on Brock Bowers, there probably would have been a chance for that trade to happen. But they wanted him just as badly as the Rams wanted him. And I tried to stress that, you know, especially on draft night, right, and talking about it as we talked about it. When a player becomes the favorite player of Sean McVay, think about that for a second and put some credence into that because he understands how this all works and is able to imagine Brock Bowers with Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua. And Sean McVay kind of running the show. Kieran Williams, their young running back,
explosive.
Yeah, exactly. So he saw in Brock Bowers somebody that he was willing to move up to, even though he's loaded with weapons as is. He wanted to add another weapon to that repertoire, in the form of Brock Bowers. He loved Brock Bowers. So That tells me something about Brock Bowers more than anything else.
Oh, sure. And then when the trade, when they traded back, so Minnesota would go to 10 and Jets went to number 13. Rams got back on the phone. You right. know, they were like, listen, we'll offer you.
The Jets went to 12.
Yeah, the Jets.
They flipped with the Vikings, right? They went to, no, not number 12. Where did they, the Vikings went to.
Jets were 10, yeah. Vikings were 11.
Right, so they went to 11.
Right, and then, so when that happened, the Rams got back on the phone and offered their first, second, and third round picks
right.
to move up to number 11, and along with a sixth rounder, and Jets wouldn't budge. Jets
no.
were like, no, we don't want to do that.
They wanted their guy, too, mm-hmm. at that point. So, yeah, it's
hard to get people to trade down. You know, it's hard to get people to move down in that
not
order.
Not many spots.
You know,
yeah.
it is. It's a lot.
And that's why the Raiders were behind such an eight ball trying to move up to go get a quarterback, you know, in the top three, because, you know, they wanted one of those top three quarterbacks. Jaden Daniels obviously was the guy that they really wanted, and it was just impossible because you're asking a team in Washington or New England, depending on how that all would have played out, to move all the way from number 2 or number 3 all the way to number 13. That's hard to do, especially when you don't have two first-round picks to offer them, or you're not just willing to give up your entire draft. And even if you are, I don't think there was anything that the Raiders could have given, because I'm sure they threw everything at him to be able to move up into that area of the draft. And that's why we have conversations, you know, about a Dak Prescott, about a proven commodity, because it's so hard, depending where you are in the draft, to move into position to go get the guy that you really want, short of being in the top three and to finish and to be a team that has a top three pick, let's just say, going into next year's draft. You're going to have to be a really bad football team. And I don't see that the Raiders are going to be a really bad football team.
Okay, let's take a break. And on the other side, we have Jason Fitz from Yahoo Sports. We'll talk to him about the Raiders at this point of the offseason, as well as other NFL news and notes. He's next here on Raider Nation Radio.